and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that we find you well and happy today. We're so happy to be a part of the Progressive Radio Network, Gary Nell's Network, right here at PRN.FM. One reason is because the shows are available to you while we do them. We'll have our guests on live this morning, as we always do, but also on the archive, which is available to you 24/7. And I'd like to introduce our guest today. That is Mr. Rick Scalzo, president and founder of Gaia Herbs. Rick is one of North America's most respected herbalists and botanical researchers, with more than 25 years of clinical and practical experience with herbal medicine. After studying herbal medicine at the School of Natural Healing with Dr. John Christopher, who I knew well too, Rick practiced as a clinical herbalist in New England. He regularly teaches herbal classes, interfaces with the media, and lectures nationally, and probably internationally as well, on herbal topics. Rick is the co-author of Herbal Solutions for Healthy Living, which is a groundbreaking herbal repertory and therapeutic dispensatory guide to the safe and effective use of medicinal herbs, and they have that book has sold more than 250,000 copies. He also co-authored Traditional Medicines from the Earth, a compendium of formulations that are effective herbal solutions for healthy living. And he is the publisher and contributing author of the Protocol Journal of Botanical Medicine. In addition, Rick is a lifelong student of Vedic philosophy and spiritual practices and holds an honorary doctorate in naturopathy from the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine in Tempe, Arizona. He received a Master Herbalist degree in 1982 from the School of Natural Healing. Rick also founded Gaia Herbal Research Institute, which, along with its publishing arm, Herbal Research Publications, has contributed extensively to the quality and proliferation of herbal literacy in the United States. And if you want to know more about all of Rick's work, go to Gaia Herbs. That's GAIAHerbs.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rick.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on your show.
Now, I know you have been on this journey probably close to your whole life. Why don't we backtrack to the little boy, Rick, and tell us when you recognized that this was a life path in terms of herbal medicine.
You know, Ellen, it was when I was much younger, right out of school, I was mostly looking for my spiritual path, and I realized at that point that it was nature that was going to connect me to what I was seeking spiritually. So I turned my life towards nature, and that led me to plants and led me to healing, and simply in order to understand more about the formative forces of nature and how it works, and try to understand the deeper guiding principles of nature. And it was through that discovery that I connected with plants and became really passionate about wild foods and medicines, and that eventually led me to studying with Dr. Christopher, who you mentioned in my bio.
And we were fortunate that in those days Dr. Christopher was still actually around.
That's right.
As well as many of the great teachers. I studied with Dr. Christopher and Bernard Jensen and Ann Wigmore, and you know, I'm realizing that you and I are now becoming the elders. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it is interesting because they, you know, as we were learning, they were our elders and they were our guiding lights in terms of the knowledge of nature cure and natural medicine.
Now, when you chose to open a more commercial venture, Gaia Herbs, what was your concept in terms of forming that company?
Well, at the time, I was in a medical practice. This was sometime after I got out of school. I was in a medical practice in Massachusetts, and I was responsible for seeing the patients and providing botanical consultation and going out to harvest their medicines and making their medicines into extracts and dispensing them in the medicinary. And it just became too much for me. I was very successful, had a very busy practice, and I decided that I would make a line of products that would serve my patients. And that eventually grew into what we now know as Gaia Herbs. I had no intention from the very beginning to grow out a big company, only to provide a small range of products to help support the organ systems of one's body.
And that's what your books really focus on also, that kind of support.
Yeah, that's right. It focuses on the rejuvenative tonics, elixirs, and solutions for getting well and staying well.
So basically you started this as a concept in natural healing to provide more accessibility to your private patients, and it sort of just grew organically, if we can use that word, into something much, much larger.
Yeah, it did. And how it happened was ironic, because I was up in Massachusetts at the time, and I had a lot of passionate friends around New England, and I would go to their health food stores and give talks and just to kind of build up awareness of plant-based remedies. And it was through that kind of being on tour, so to speak, for the first couple of years, that it became very evident that what I was doing was well received, and it led to the formation of Gaia Herbs.
In addition, it really makes those kinds of high quality products accessible to many more people because of that growth.
Well, it does. I mean, a lot has changed since then. It's been, 27 years now?
Oh, is that amazing?
And, there's a lot of gaps to fill in between then and now in terms of what we've done. But, yeah, to make not only high-quality medicines available to the masses, but to ensure safety, purity, and efficacy of those products.
And also, what about when you first started, you were talking about going out and finding wild plants, it sounds like learning how to do wildcrafting and making your own medicine, which, by the way, myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, who you also know, we do have classes in that 5 or 6 times a year on various organic farms in the area, and also just in the woods, where we take people out for the day, gather wild, edible, and medicinal plants, and make them into medicine. And so that's still going on instead of wildcrafting, but it's not practical for everyone to learn that skill.
Yeah, it's not. And, and then the question arises, are you skilled in identity and botany? And, for me at that time, it was simple, because I was looking for simple plants that were easily identifiable and easily accessible in the wild, things like stinging nettles and red clover and dandelion and plantain. Dr. Christopher used to call dandelion, red clover, and plantain the Holy Trinity, which implied that you could find them growing in almost any part of the world. And so, those were the herbs that I started with. Those were what we, became really passionate with in school. And then it broadened out from there to nettles, and then to black cohosh and blue cohosh, herbs that were common in the woods.
And, that's a wonderful skill that I think is definitely worth pursuing, both in terms of educating oneself, connecting with nature. I love taking children out to do that. And then you can also have available all these well-done commercial preparations. It doesn't mean you have to give up on them, but you can understand the plant. As a professor at Stony Brook Medical School, where I teach now, I require my students, rather than just using natural remedies in pill form or even in liquid extract form, that they have to do a project with the plant itself. Because you know the plant, you know how to smell the plant, you know what it looks like at different lifestyles. I mean, that's really a deeper cosmic understanding of the plant.
And it's amazing. I have done a lot of classes like you have, Ellen, out in the fields, where I take students and we take them to plants that they've never seen or never heard of before, and ask them to sit with the plant for a day and just experience the plant. And it's quite interesting, without having read about it, understood about it, known about it, and in a plant that they're totally foreign with, they come back at the end of the day and they write a script that is so accurate about what the plant does and how it works in the body. And I'm always amazed when I see this, because it tells me that our plants are teachers, and if you open yourself up to those impulses of knowledge, you can learn from the plant directly by being with it in the wild.
That's so true. And what led you to use the word Gaia as your company did grow? Why is that the name of it?
Well, I wanted something more universal, that had more of a universal meaning. Gaia means Earth, but it means something more than that. It means that we are all connected. And all, when I say we, I mean all living organisms are connected to each other, and we live within the Earth, and we live in a very dynamic, interactive space that is codependent. You know, so there's this whole idea of coevolution that exists between not just plants and people, but all living forms. And so the idea of Gaia was one that implies something much more broad and comprehensive of a term, and it seemed to fit, you know, where I was philosophically at the time.
So true, and it really fits now. I think, if anything, it's evolved to be very well recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, other people have gravitated towards understanding that term better because of your use of it. So I think
yeah.
It was a wonderful choice. Now, they sent me a little book of yours to look at, which I've never actually seen before, and I've been looking through it the last few days, and it's not one of the ones we mentioned, but it's called Meetings and Awakenings.
Mm.
And that's a beautiful little book, The Coevolution of Plants and People.
Yeah, that's been, that was kind of an inspiration more than a thought book of ideas or a thought book of just points of knowledge. It was more about my observations with plants and the connections between plants and people and the formative forces of nature, and realizing that at every moment throughout the day there are meetings that are taking place between plants and other formative forces of nature, such as the sunlight, the movement of the sun across the sky, the changing of the passing of day and night, changing of the seasons, and the insects and beneficials and pathogenic insects, and the all the forces within the soil. There's a lot of dynamism going on, and a lot of relational activity going on. And for me, it's about, you know, how a plant shows up, and I like to use that term, showing up every moment to be present in those relationships and those formative forces, so that it can grow, evolve, and serve our physiology in a way that it needs. It's so beautiful to think of it in that way.
It truly is. Have you ever taken a look at a book, maybe you have, called The Biology of Belief? Which is
no, I'm not. I'm not familiar with that book.
Well, you would love it, Rick. It's written by Michael Pollack, and what he talks about, because there was a screening of that movie, and I was asked to be the presenter, you know, ahead of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's about is exactly what you just shared, but he just goes into a little bit more detail about how plants have sort of used humans to proliferate their evolution in very specific ways, such as using humans as a seed dispersal vehicle,
mm-hmm.
Both through, like you would use any animal, ingestion, and then, you know, going to the bathroom somewhere. But also, he was looking at the fact that it seemed like plants knew about that humans could take them far into far distances. One thing within the movie that he said several times was that, oh, well, we can't really say plants have consciousness. But what I did in my preview to the movie was actually pull up a lot of more recent documentation, considering the fact that perhaps plants do have consciousness, you know, looking at their ability to communicate both with each other and ourselves. And that can be on both a subtle energy level, but also through the release of chemicals and scents and things like that.
You know, and it may not be consciousness as we know and understand it, but there is intelligence. And, you know, nothing exists in isolation in nature, and this intelligence has organizing power. And, you know, related to the human body, what is interesting to observe is that for every biological substance in the body and mind of nature, i.e. plants, there is a corresponding and complementary receptor in our body. And so that kind of speaks to this whole idea of coevolution, that, you know, the human gene, human genome and the plant genome have been co-evolving for as long as we can imagine. And so there is a wisdom there. There's some intelligence at play here. And, you know, and it's for us to really stop for a moment, listen, and to, most importantly, not be disruptive in that co-evolutionary process.
Oh, that's a beautiful statement. Well, this book, I think, really mirrors that marriage that you've worked towards in terms of your own spiritual growth and your deep understanding of plants, talking about the co-evolution of plants and people.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's an idea, a thought process about how we are connected and how, as you said, plants are very connected to human life and are serving us in very dynamic ways. And it's quite interesting to see how pharmaceutical medicines have, I use the word disruption, but really have disrupted that relational dynamics in terms of that intelligence that's present in the relation and co-evolution that's present and distorted what a plant is there to offer by virtue of isolation, purification, elucidation of one unique chemical at the expense of the totality of what a plant has to offer.
Okay, now that's an interesting discussion that I'm going to continue on that thread, because, you know, you as a provider in the commercial marketplace do offer, because, for instance, there's a demand in the industry for both whole plant as well as what's called standardized. So why don't you define for our audience, what is a standardized extract? It's kind of like what you just said a moment ago, but they may not, you know that. And do you feel that there's the ability in the marketplace to sustain the use of both whole plant and standardized?
Well, standardized medicines, plant-based medicines that are standardized, can be produced in a number of different ways. They can be produced by that process of purifying, isolating, and elucidating one particular ingredient from a plant. They can also be made by concentrating a plant and in measuring for one particular activity and producing repeatedly to that same activity time and time again, batch after batch. So what I believe is, in my philosophy of plants, is the best approach is the approach of being a co-participant in a plant's process of giving and evolving to give to the human body, and not disrupt what is there in its natural relationship in terms of the balance of chemistries. And I think that's what I refer to as lately as the term synergy. That there are chemicals in plants that are intended to be there by the plant that facilitate the absorption of other chemicals. And there are herbs that are there intentionally in the plant world that are intended to facilitate the absorption of other plants. So when you apply this wisdom to actual, you know, products, you can think about, well, what does synergy mean in product manufacturing and in making herbal products? It means, you know, to understand that philosophy that nature is pure and nature is whole and nature is indeed intelligent, and using the wisdom of nature and the chemistries of nature to help facilitate absorption and to help facilitate how a plant actually works in the body.
I think that's a great explanation. And, you know, for a long time, I actually sort of did not approve. As a traditional herbalist, which you, of course, are also, I wasn't really thrilled with the whole concept of standardization, which I would say burst forth onto the marketplace when I started hearing about it in 1992, to where they were trying to commercialize that concept. And I'm not sure if I'm off on that number or you have a different year that you think that it was coming forth in being recognized as a term in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so right that actually the term itself, standardization, is not standardized, because people can standardize all different kinds of ways.
Yeah, there's very little in natural products in the natural product industry when it comes to regulations that is standardized. You know, we now have a governing body of legislation that governs how botanical products, dietary supplements are made. But in that governing body of guidance, of legislation, it's very vague, and it's left up to the companies to define their own processes and specifications.
Right, exactly. So the term itself is not standardized. I find that ironic. The other thing, of course, is the process of standardization is also not standardized, as you just elucidated. And in addition, the fact that perhaps using a standardized is more effective is not really well proven.
Well, I'll give you an example, which is, you know, very real and very present, and that is with turmeric. Turmeric has become one of our most popular herbs these days. It actually has become Gaia Herb's top-selling product. And there's been a aggressive effort in the manufacturing industry to somehow find a way to improve the absorption of turmeric, because it's well known that the curcumins in turmeric don't absorb well in the gut. And it's well thought that in order to absorb well in the gut, you have to remove all of the synergistic compounds other than curcumins in order to get them absorbed. And so there's a lot of effort that's been made to purify and isolate the curcuminoids. And in doing so, high concentrations of curcuminoids, very unnaturally, unnatural in the way they exist in the plant, very high concentrations are now achieved in order to get very small levels of absorption. And I argue the point that you don't need to do that, that there are similar compounds in nature that can facilitate the absorption of curcumin in the body in its whole natural state. And we've done some studies at Bastyr University, although they're in vitro studies, that show that if you combine like compounds with curcumin, with turmeric, you can actually enhance absorption of curcumin by over 200%.
See, that's excellent information. And we can also look at, you know, epidemiological studies of whole populations which have been using turmeric as a spice in cooking. Of course, this isn't a clinical controlled trial, but looking at the data, and in terms of their lower level of certain of the diseases that curcumin seems to be protective of.
Yeah, especially gastrointestinal disorders and joint disorders like osteoarthritis. Curcumin, turmeric is extremely beneficial, and I think it's here. I think that's an herb that's here to stay in terms of mass consumption, and it's only going to get stronger because it really is effective. And the only challenge with turmeric is finding a way to improve absorption. And I know that we've done it. We are getting exceptional results using it in its full spectrum state rather than in its purified state. And it seems to work tremendously. And I think people understand the value of using turmeric as a pathway to lower inflammation.
Well, I want you to hold that thought, and we'll continue with our discussion when we come back. We are talking to Rick Scalzo, and we're talking about Gaia Herbs, and we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
The common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the Natural Medicine Chest.
Welcome back for more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And Dr. Z and myself, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, would love you to join us on the ground in person as we do presentations and lectures all over the country and have our Echo Tours for Cures. We just got back from our 25th trip to Jamaica, living in the bush with the Jamaican shamanic healers, and that is now a course that you can get college credit for, so it's evolved over the years. Really a lot of fun, and we have one coming up in Chinatown. Also, you can join us at the Naval Expo. The Naval Expo is at the Huntington Hilton. Go to navalexpo.com to find out when the next Naval Expo is, and I'll be presenting there. And we also have the American Herbalist Guild, and we have the Long Island chapter of the American Herbalist Guild, and there's also a New York City chapter, so you can get in touch to find out more. The best place to go is naturalnurse.com. You can contact us through there, or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we'd like to reintroduce our guest that we have today on with us on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and that is Rick Scalzo. He is one of North America's most respected herbalists and botanical researchers, as I'm sure you're aware if you've been listening to the show. You can find out more at GaiaHerbs.com. So thank you so much for joining us today, Rick, on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And we were talking about very interesting things in terms of turmeric. And what are your feelings about using something just as a spice versus an herbal extract?
Well, I do think that, you know, the best medicine is the preventative medicine. And if you can adjust your diet and the use spices or herbs in your diet in a regular way and understand how to use those in soups or in in your cooking, I think that goes a long way in preserving wellness. You know, I have a background, Ellen, in Chinese medicine, and it's very common that I use herbs like astragalus root and goji berries and schizandra berries in my soups. And it's very common that I'll use turmeric and black pepper in my vegetable curries. So, you know, and there are cultures all over the world that teach us that using spices and herbs in cooking are part of a way of keeping your immune system healthy, keeping the microorganisms in the gut in balance, and of course keeping the unfriendly microorganisms at check in the body. You know, a lot of these plants like thyme and oregano and rosemary and sage, they have a lot of antimicrobial activity and can keep your immune system healthy.
Now, of course, one of the things that I know you do is you like having control actually all the way from the growing of the herbs to the formulation, if possible.
Yes, and that is what we call, you know, our seed-to-shelf chain of custody. And a lot has evolved since, you know, the early days where, you know, we were just, you know, beginning dabbling into farming. And now we're operating 350 acres here in North Carolina. We've got a 200-acre farm operating in China. We've got land in Costa Rica. And so we're putting lots of emphasis on the horticultural development of plants. And we've developed a tremendous amount of R&D, research and development activities at Gaia, where all the testing equipment for microbial activity, heavy metals, pesticides, biological activity, all of that's done in-house. And then advanced extraction technologies are present here. So it's come a long way. And I like to think that, you know, the whole objective is to ensure the purity, integrity, and potency of the plants that are produced by Gaia.
Now, what about, that's very interesting that you said, with China. Mm-hmm. And some people have often asked me, if something's imported from another country like that, although you may have complete control over the growing conditions, are there any issues in terms of transporting them to the United States with various regulatory effects in terms of, you know, spraying and testing and things that they may say need to be done?
Yeah, well, this is a very highly regulated initiative by the customs people, and there's something called the Bioterrorism Act, which now provides a requirement for all botanical suppliers outside of the U.S. to have a ID number, and that number be applied to any shipment into the United States. And we have to pre-qualify and validate any farmers or suppliers that we import herbs from overseas. And so, you know, the validation process is one of enabling to ensure that they are legitimate and also are properly trained in how to pack an herb for shipment overseas and transport it to us. So when you do all those things correctly in a compliant manner with the government regulatory people here in the U.S., then when they get over here, they don't typically go through an irradiation process, or they may oftentimes get held up by the FDA at customs
for testing.
But there's no treatment or no intervention that will take place. They'll just be tested and then released.
Well, because then you have so many things that you can grow completely, like, let's say, under your own visual control, and your absolutely gorgeous facility right in, I guess that's the Shenandoah Valley somewhere.
Well, it's in the Blue Ridge Mountains in the southern Appalachians.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, it is a beautiful facility. And yes, you know, for us here, we don't buy any herbs from anybody unless we pre-qualify them. So we'll obtain a pre-shipment sample from a grower, a farmer overseas, for example, and then test it through all of our procedures for activity, for heavy metals, for microbials, for pesticides, for identity, you know. And so we'll qualify and quantify it before we actually order that particular lot number. So it kind of makes it more of an assurance that what gets here is going to be good quality herb. Because you know as a nurse and as a healthcare provider with herbal products that an herbal product is only as good as the herbs from which it's made.
That's true. And then you also have the Meet Your Herbs program, which really gives a lot more visibility and traceability available to the public.
And that I'm really, really proud of. This is an industry global first, the Meet Your Herbs program. It's a transparency program and a traceability program, which entitles, and it is an entitlement, that a consumer has a right to know where the herbs came from, how they were grown, how they were tested. And so what this program does, it allows you to take any herbal product from Gaia and trace the ID number on the package via our website or via our Gaia Herbs app on an iPhone, and trace it all the way through. And that particular lot number for its purity and safety and efficacy. And so you'll see the test results present, where the herbs were grown, how they were grown, and even in some cases hear the stories from the growers. So it's a way just to connect the consumer with, you know, the whole process of how their herbs were made and where they were grown.
Yeah, very, 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 very nice thing for people to know about. Now let's talk about some specific herbs. What are some new things that you think will be, you know, becoming up and coming in the marketplace in terms of
herbs? And, you know, I think what we find is awareness with plants goes in cycles, sometimes with popularity, and you know, turmeric is certainly on the rise now in terms of popularity. Another herb that's not new but is gaining a resurgence of popularity is maca, which I find very exciting because in the Peruvian Andes, maca is considered a food. It grows at a very high elevation, and so here's another kind of traditional use of a Peruvian herb in this case, which was traditionally used as a food for energy and vitality, now finding its way back into North America for consumption as a food and for energy and vitality. So I like that, and more people are catching on to maca as an up and coming herb. And I personally think that a common Chinese herb, Schizandra berry, I made reference to earlier, is going to become a very commonly ingested herb in the not-too-distant future. That plant is, in Chinese literature, it's referred to as Wu Wei Zhu, and it is translated to mean the five-flavored herb, and it carries five distinct flavors, and which implies that it's very balancing to the physiology and very balancing to the hormonal and energy system. So here's another herb, which is what we call an adaptogen, helping us to adapt to stress in a better way, that I think is going to find its way into beverages and into food and spice blends, and I think just become more popularly used as an herbal remedy.
And those have been around for a long time. But what do you think of the Dr. Oz effect, where, you know, whatever he sells, you better have a lot of available?
It's interesting, and it's also quite, you know, consuming in its own way, you know, because oftentimes the Dr. Oz effect is the spike effect, where, you know, you get a lot of popularity around a certain herb for a short period of time, and then it fades away. And it oftentimes is around weight loss products or something with the, quote, the sensationalism attached to it. I'm always kind of somewhat leery about that approach to kind of popularizing herbs, because I like the things like turmeric that are here and have been here and that are going to be here tomorrow and stay for a long time. So I think Dr. Oz is great to bring awareness, and but sometimes I wish it would be in a more kind of a broader context of really what true health and healing is about.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, let's say, unrealistic expectation levels in terms of natural medicine. I find it, that whole Dr. Oz effect, as a double-edged sword. It does drive people who have never considered using natural remedies to investigate them. But, you know, then once they're there, like you said, if they just think that there's a one-pill solution to bring all your problems to rest. There really isn't. And that's true both for drug therapies and for natural remedies. It's part, as you pointed out earlier, with a whole food solution exercise, looking at what makes us happy, what stresses are there in our life.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that one little bleep is kind of unrealistic. But it's been interesting. It certainly has moved the industry in a direction of incorporating many more formally mainstream-type people.
You know, when you look at the blue zones of the world where people live to be 100 years or older, you know,
well, wait,
not
I'm
a...
not going to, wait. I want you to go a little bit more deeply into that. Tell people what that is before we talk about it.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of work done on the different communities of the world, such as in Sardinia and Okinawa and in a place called Ikaria in Greece and even in Loma Linda, which is an evolved blue zone in California. These are the populations of the world that have been studied now and have been shown to live a healthy, long life, in many cases well over 100 years old. And you know, what's interesting about the research of these people is that there isn't kind of an approach towards this sensationalism use of anything, including exercise or even diet for that matter. There's a balance in sustaining a healthy lifestyle over a long period of time using nature and eating well, drinking clean water, breathing pure air, living in a healthy community, having a belief purpose, having something to wake up and look forward to every morning, have something you believe in, and living in a community type of lifestyle with family and friends that are meaningful to you. Those, to me, are the real secrets of longevity. Rather than, you know, the one pill approach.
Well, right. There isn't any one pill approach that works. Everybody wishes there was, but that's just not how it works. And we do need to take one more little break right here so that other shows that air on Progressive Radio Network can be identified so people know they can listen into them. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion, very in-depth, interesting discussion with Mr. Rick Scalzo. You can find out more at GaiaHerbs.com. That's GaiaHerbs.com. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love to hear from you. You can always call in with questions to the show right here. And that call-in number is to the Gary Null radio station, which is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Or you can visit us online at naturalnurse.com. We do take your questions there as well on an ongoing level. We have many things available for you, such as an herbal certification class that's both available online as well as on ground. And this year we'll be holding classes at the Old Bethpage Restoration Village Farm, which is a beautiful farm where they grow all organic food. And they just got this year, they're very happy to have gotten a grant for a building. So we'll actually be able to have classrooms inside as well as in the field. So we're looking forward to that. So I would like to reintroduce our guest for today, and that is Rick Scalzo, CEO, president, and founder of Gaia Herbs. And he is one of North America's most respected herbalists and botanical researchers with more than 25 years of clinical and practical experience with herbal medicine. So thank you so much for joining us today, Rick.
It's a pleasure. I'm having a great time. Thank you.
And we have a few minutes left, so I'd like you to go into some formulas that you think are important and balanced.
That are prepared from Gaia?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I think when you look about the herbal line of products that we make and try to identify one or two products that kind of make sense for everybody. There's one in particular that stands out, and it's called our Adrenal Health product. It's an amazing product because it consists of five plants that are well known as herbal adaptogens. You know, we have a lot of stress in life now. And
now that's a big thing. That is something everybody can certainly relate to,
yeah,
one way or another.
And it is. It's true. Everybody can relate to it. And, you know, and really, ultimately, there is no stress in life, only a stressful response. And how we respond to stress determines its impact upon us. So why not improve our stress response? In other words, respond to stress in a way that doesn't damage the body and the physiological responses, the whole parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system response. So the Adrenal Health product consists of holy basil, ashwagandha, rhodiola, schizandra berry, and wild oats, five very important herbs, all considered to be very tonic, and some of which are very important adaptogens, and all of which can support the nervous system in its own unique way. I like to say that this product enables one to, quote, stay in the eye of the hurricane. In other words, be in stillness while you're living in a world of dynamism, and then you'll get more out of your life. So it does. It creates an inner peace and inner stillness in the physiology, and I think it's probably one of the best herbs that I would suggest for people that are looking for something that's, you know, balancing. Another product, which is a bit more seasonal, which I'm very, very proud of because it has 5 years of NIH-funded research behind it. The National Institutes for Health funded a $2 million grant for Gaia to study echinacea, and we developed a product from that research called Quick Defense, which is just completing a very elaborate clinical trial now at the North Carolina Research Center. And if there ever was a particular cure for the common cold, and I'm not supposed to say that, I realize that, but you know, I think Quick Defense has proved to be a miraculous remedy for people who are coming down with the first onset symptoms of a cold. They're not yet sick, but they feel like they're going to get sick, and high frequent doses of Quick Defense for 2 days only is enough to eradicate this onset.
Now, that's a very good point that you brought up. You're actually studying that, what you're discussing, scientifically. Why is there so much, and this is like more of a political question, repression of sharing the truth in terms of herbal medicine?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of resistance because you've got a lot of forces, the pharmaceutical companies who claim that, you know, there's problem with safety and problem with purity. You have doctors who claim that there's problems with efficacy and safety. And, you know, without any legitimate reasons to back it up. And I think that botanical medicines have become, and natural products have become, a big industry, you know, a $50 billion industry. So now it's becoming somewhat of a threat. And I think it just doesn't fit into the model that the insurance companies have paved for medicines, you know. And I think it doesn't fit into the model that pharmaceutical companies have paved. It's a unique, disruptive model of medicine. And I think, you know, we have to keep pushing it because it is a holistic model, and it's a model that's safe, and it's a model that can deliver, you know, the best outcomes for the long haul.
So much so. You know, of course, I'm in complete agreement with you, but I find that it's draconian and diabolical, truthfully, that they limit the use of information sharing,
yeah,
in terms of herbal medicine. Like, for instance, if there's a study, let's say a scientifically valid study that's even published in a mainstream medical journal that mentions the name of your brand and then says something like used for cold and flu intervention, you can't quote the name of that study on a website where that product is,
yeah,
even though it's scientifically valid.
It's considered making a claim, and it's unfortunate. you know, and even for something as simple as the common cold, you know, our holistic understanding of the common cold, from a point of view of virology and understanding what happens within the secondary immune system of a cold, we can approach this in a much different way than how pharmaceutical drugs approach treating a cold. Very, very different.
So true. And I've been looking into the mechanisms of action of herbal medicines, which is so fascinating. Yeah. And if you look at something like golden seal and the berberine content, actually influences the multi-drug resistant pump within the cell structure. And that's what allows it to be such an effective long-term antibiotic that does not create resistant bacteria production, which
yeah.
pharmaceutical drugs do create. So there is so much validity, and yet you could not share a study that shows that mechanism of action freely with the public.
This is true.
That's something that needs to be done about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank you so much for your great work over all these years. And, you know, just one thing. Who would you say your heroes are?
Who are my heroes? I think those are the folks, the elders that walk on this earth gently, that take the time to listen, that take the time to observe, and that take the time to walk in harmony with nature. I think those are my true heroes.
Well, that's really an exquisite way to close the show, and thank you so much, Rick. And what is the best way for people to find out more about you, your book, and your work?
I think people can go on the Gaia Herbs website at www.gaiaherbs.com, and there's a lot of information there, and that's the best way to kind of connect to all that we do and all that we offer.
Well, thank you so much again, and you know, may you walk well with the plants.
Yes, walk gently. Tread gently upon the earth.
Same true for all our listeners. So again, thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another show right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network. One of the great things is if you enjoyed our show today, you can find it on the archives. I will say usually pretty immediately, or certainly by the next day after the broadcast, and then it's there for quite a while. So you can go to prn.fm. Go to Natural Nurse under Shows, and then you'll see all the wonderful guests we've had. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other fabulous broadcasts and shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can find me at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And until then, we hope that you stay healthy.